A rich cloud of meat smoke, drifting slowly across the grapevines and paddocks, greeted the members of the Cleary family as they arrived at the vineyard. The tasty mist from a dozen barbecues billowed over the house, the homestead, as Hugh Cleary called it, and the stable and the rammed earth wine cellar, and above the rows of newly planted Pinot Noir vines, and curled up into the blue gums and manna gums bordering the creek. Now he believed he was a dead person, Hugh's younger brother Simon, Sly Cleary, peered out of the car window at the gaunt new vines and wondered how long he'd be spending in this gravelly realm between heaven and hell. In the eyes of the former keyboard player for Spiderflower, suffering a delusionary mental belief that he'd lost his vital organs and no longer existed, perhaps this particular phase was purgatory. Before it dispersed over the creek, the smoke of Sly Cleary's imagined afterlife also wound slowly around Hugh, the tense and beaming host, busy with his father Mick, his son Liam, and his cousin, Father Ryan Cleary, in directing the car parking. Two dry and tussocky home paddocks yet to be planted with vines had been set aside for parking and for those who'd chosen camping as an alternative to motel accommodation in town. And as more and more cars arrived and tents were erected, the chatter and bustle grew and a pale dust cloud rose and merged into the denser meat smoke that hung over the paddocks. In the humid absence of a significant breeze, the smoky haze wafted above racing, shrieking, and already flushed children, and over clumps of earlier arrivals tucking into the wine and beer, their snatches of laughter carrying across the paddocks and vines, and drifted over a young tattooed couple having sex in the bushes by the creek. More vehicles arrived, car doors slammed and newcomers shouted greetings. People hugged and kissed and patted kids' heads. Five or six dogs, stimulated to ravenous skittishness by the smoke's meaty odours, chased each other from group to group, bounding and yapping and running in frenzied circles. There was a reason for all this excited activity. In Hugh and Christine Cleary's vineyard, Whipbird, in the foothills of Cungadji, just outside Ballarat, in the state of Victoria, the Cleary family planned to spend the weekend celebrating the 160th anniversary of its presence in Australia. To any wet blankets who might have considered a 160th anniversary somehow lacked the neat appeal of a centenary or a sesquicentenary celebration, Hugh's invitation, sent out 6 months previously, had pointed out that the family's centenary in 1954 was so long ago that not many of them were around to participate. And in 2004, the 150th had somehow slipped by unnoticed. Now that his new vineyard provided the perfect venue, he believed the family should seize the day, the unstated message in the invitation being that so many of them, himself for example, were doing so much better in their various endeavours than they were in 2004, and duly celebrate the arrival of their ancestor Connor Cleary in Melbourne in 1854. Most of Connor's descendants agreed that an open-air celebration suited the occasion and the sunny weekend they hoped for as Ballarat's spring made its jerky transition into summer, as did the earthy surroundings of a winery, and somehow a mouth-watering haze of grilling beef, pork, lamb and chicken, the sizzling aroma of outdoor cooked animal protein, overlaid and entwined with the pungency of frying onions, seemed especially Australian. And after all, the weekend's party was essentially a celebration of their being Australian. Although the family birth rate had standardised by the 21st century, all those Antipodean Clearys coming into the world in the 1860s, 70s and 80s, and the big Catholic broods they'd produced in their turn in the 20th century, it was no wonder that by Saturday, 29th of November 2014, the new vineyard at Cungadji, Cungadji meaning goodbye, being the word most emphasised by the indigenous Warhurrung people to the region's first Europeans, was packed from creek to homestead with vividly dressed descendants of Connor and Mary Cleary and Connor and Bridget Cleary. As well as hectic school-aged children, there were squirming excited toddlers and scores of babes in arms and in strollers, prams and carry cots as well. Young fathers harnessed to papoose carriers and juggling drinks over their child-laden stomachs made an effort to stay cheery and avoid dripping Shiraz on their babies' heads. Far out, Olivia muttered to her sister. These women need to get on the pill or stop doing it. It's tripping me out, Zoe said. For those who'd obeyed Christine's instructions and worn the appropriate coloured T-shirt came a swift kiss on or near the cheek. those who'd flouted her directive, especially the six bandana-wearing Sheens, who, intending to replicate the clothing of an Irish immigrant stepping off a boat in 1854, had, confusingly, come dressed as pirates, received an icy smile and a longer wait than the others for their registration to be completed. However, one incorrectly dressed, lank-haired and haggard visitor, wearing a baggy old woolen overcoat in a herringbone pattern and led along in his worn alligator-skin cowboy boots by a young aqua-haired woman, was swiftly ushered, though definitely unkissed, through the registration process. As he passed through, Zoe whispered, "Check out the old scarecrow." "Oh my God, Nightmare on Elm Street," said Olivia. "That's your Uncle Simon and your cousin Willow," their mother muttered. "There's a lesson there." The twins gaped as the spectral figure moved slowly into the crowd, a skeleton in a coat. They remembered overheard adult conversations about their father's unconventional younger brother, their seldom seen musician uncle, Simon, and his rare psychiatric condition. The rock and roll and drug whispers sparking their attention before the talk was abruptly halted. Any coolness factor vanished at the sight of him. No wonder he was a disapproved of member of the family, who lived in a hippie rainforest somewhere. An invalid, something schizo apparently, and judging by his scabby clothes, obviously depressingly poor. And Willow's hair was like a total fail. Their wake was instantly filled by the jostling mob, grizzling babies, skidding children, and old people in bright, ill-fitting T-shirts, who shouted effusive greetings as they hugged and shook each other's knotted hands and tottered off into a landscape that appeared to the twins to be a merged mass of dull parent and grandparent types, a sea of bare pink skulls and grey hair and unfashionably gaudy and shapeless casual wear, and six pirates. The girls looked at each other. These people were actually their relatives?